a leather tourniquet, raised his veins.
Never worried about anything? Didn't know how to worry when you were a child?
Chad was somewhere, sailing.
And you always had someone to take care of you? Always.
Like God's messenger spreading her wings, Angela pointed to Chad's desk. Chad looked. On the blotter, between Cohibas Chad smoked but didn't like smoking, and his membership card to the Sports Club L.A., was a liquefied substance in a vial and a stainless steel syringe. Beautiful. That glistened, even under the fluorescent light. Artfully delicate, studiously practiced, the tip of the syringe was slid into the vial. The liquid inside extracted.
I'm, Chad said, sick, Angela. I need to be taken care of. Will you take care of me?
Pitiable as Chad sounded, Angela didn't pity him. Angela was beyond making judgments about people, their status or station in life.
You know I'll take care of you, Chad.
And she would. Angela took care of everyone equally. Chad's arm got lifted to her mouth. His skin got kissed by her lips. The lipstick left a mark, a ruby-red mark that, in Chad's mind, looked like a target.
Promise? Promise to take care of me?
There was laughter in Angela's voice.
Oh, Chad, it's so funny. Sometimes I think I love you. Sometimes.
The needle of the syringe plunged into the lipstick bullseye. Blood was drawn back from Chad's body, mixed with a speedball cocktail, then delivered back into him. In less than any measurable time, Chad began to twitch, jump, and contort. Just as quick, he stopped moving. Like clouds across a Kansas sky, bliss drifted across Chad's face. His head dropped to the side, or maybe turned, to listen to a sound 100 million miles away. He felt himself moving closer to it, and picking up speed. He managed to mumble,
"My God, it's beautiful, so beautiful." "What's beautiful?" "The music. Kid's a genius. I think I'll tell him."
Chad very quickly saw his 7th birthday when he didn't get the big gym action playset he wanted. He saw when he was 13 and grabbed that girl's breast while he passed her in the hall at school. He saw himself suiting up for his first day as an assistant at an agency, ready to take on the world. Maybe not the world, but Hollywood. Chad could take on Hollywood. Sure he could. Chad could take it on and win. That was the last thing Chad Bayless ever saw. In a big Vegas strip theme hotel on the 12th floor, down the hall off the elevator was room 12101, a mini suite. The door was locked, and on the handle was a Do Not Disturb sign hung there, not in the least bit surreptitiously, by Marcus. He wanted the white girl, Bryce, he'd come to find out her name was. He wanted her to know that he didn't plan on being disturbed, interrupted, or impeded for the next couple of hours. Marcus was unbuttoning his shirt, glad he'd taken time the night before to hit the hotel spa. He wasn't ripped, but he was pumped. Bryce was futzing with the Bose Wave radio, trying to settle on a tune she could groove to, having already made a full swing up and down the band. Classic Benatar, but Bryce didn't work to chicks. Sting. Bryan Adams crooning his way through another movie soundtrack song. Shit,
She'd listen to Sting's fake-ass soul crap first. Didn't they play any music in Vegas? Maybe, Bryce thought, they fed this garbage into the rooms to drive people down into the casinos. Forget that, Marcus said. I want to find something good. I don't need music.
I do.
Bryce kept scanning. More shit. More shit. Journey. Journey? That was almost classic rock. Close enough, Bryce said. She stood, turned, got a faceful of Marcus's bare chest. No hair and a fair amount of muscle. And here it was almost a full day since the last time she'd come. All in all, it was too bad she was going to have to do an ashtray job on him. Marcus gave Bryce that, "You're a pork chop and I'm starving" look. Never hit it with a white chick before. He was practically busting out of his pants. Don't know why. Had my shot at plenty. Just always thought there was something wrong about it. Bryce considered this. Well, I've got good news. Her hand went to the small of her back. And I've got bad news. It came back around, clutching her piece. All the gun got from Marcus was a little laugh. What the hell is that supposed to?
You seem like a cool guy, so let's just get to it, Daddy-O. Where are the drugs?
Girl, you better check yourself. Marcus wasn't laughing anymore. He wasn't even smiling some. Put your toy away, or I'll do it for you.
Is that what you're going to do?
What the fuck are you going to do? You going to shoot me? You going to take your little bitch gun and shoot me? Bryce shot Marcus. One quick tap on the trigger sent a slug ripping through his shoulder, mangling up but good a portion of bone and muscle along the way. His scream and the gun's bark just about canceled each other out. Bryce asked, bored, "Next question." Marcus clutched his wound. Blood bubbled up between his fingers. From the back of his mind, he got taunted by a little voice. "See? This is what comes from trying to hit it with white chicks." Gushing wound and all, Marcus still had some quick to him. He used it to whip out a hand, back-fisting Bryce hard to the face. The blow sent her reeling, sent the gun flying from her grip. Left hand taking the girl by the hair, Marcus used his right to FedEx her some shots to the head. The force of the blows pushed her teeth through the flesh of her lips. Her nose popped, not broken yet, but jetting blood just the same. Punch after punch, Marcus drove into Bryce's skull, jaw, and temple. "Jesus Christ!" Bryce sputtered with scarlet mucus. "Lay off the face!" She dropped to her knees and would have collapsed to the floor except for the wad of hair Marcus used to suspend her. Flashback. Bridgeport. The long walk home. It was coming around again to Marcus, a feeling he thought was a one-time thing, tripped off of instinct and the need to survive. It wasn't. What it was a home-brewed violence long with him and left to ferment. A hate received, magnified, and returned to sender. It was the sensation that came when you knew if you had to, if you absolutely had to, you could kill. It was one simple thing. Start something with me, and you die. What you gonna do now, huh? In the fraction of a second between delivered blows, Marcus realized that since the violence began, his hard-on had swelled. What you gonna do without your little bitch gun? This is what Bryce did. Bryce worked her fingers into a fist. And Bryce sent that fist, using her shoulders, her hips, flying into what was right before her eyes, Marcus's massive erection. Hurricane hard, the air rushed from Marcus's lungs,
A trail of fire flash-pointed at his groin and leapt wildly throughout his body. From there was a long, fast, cut tree tumble toward the floor, with a chunk to the head by Bryce's knee on the way down. Dragging herself up, rising above the stretched-out Marcus.
That's the thing about girls. We don't expose our weaknesses.
Bryce stumbled over to her gun, picked it up. Into the bathroom she went. Cold water into the basin. Cupped hands splashed it on her face. The water hit like a sledgehammer. As best she could, Bryce washed away the blood and did a damage assessment. Her nose was swelling, and would only swell more. The bone above her cheek, just below her left eye, felt cracked. Surgery would fix that. But surgery would leave a scar. Her bottom lip was a real mess, torn and fat and purple. She opened her mouth. A tooth half hung from her gum. Very, very painfully, she twisted and pulled, yanked it loose, along with a squirt of blood. For a good amount of time, Bryce checked herself in the mirror. All the looking in the world wouldn't change facts. Her perfect face wasn't perfect anymore. Bryce left the bathroom, went back to Marcus's just now stirring body. Looking down on him, she sneered her new gap-toothed sneer.
Oh, you are so fucked.
The gremlin pulled up outside Paris and Nina's room. The room Paris stayed in with Nina, but Nina paid for, at the Shady Tree Inn.
So who's this Brunson guy? Nina asked.
Dealer over at the plaza. Friend of mine. Guess he's a friend. I just sort of know him. Spend time in Vegas. Spend time in the parts of Vegas I spend time in. Brunson's the kind of guy you get to know.
A card dealer?
Nina said. But her voice toned, some card dealer at a low-rent joint's going to get you out of a jam.
He's connected, hooked up with people. I figure I can get him to front some money for the tape, at least enough to get us out of here.
Us?
Yeah, us.
Nina stared off out the windshield.
What? Paris asked.
What's wrong?
You say us.
And?
Looking at Paris now.
You mean it? You really want to take me out of here with you?
Damn straight I mean it. I get the money and we'll go.
Where? Where would they go?
We'll go to Florida. Ever been?
Nina shook her head.
That's where we'll go. To the Keys.
Island after island, all strung together with miles of bridges. Paris had never been to the Keys, but just the same, he spun gold with words.
We'll drive to the last of them. Get a place. You and me all alone. We'll be able to find something there. A house, work, a life.
Nina went back to looking out the windshield, like what was out there, if there was anything out there in particular to look at, was of greater interest than what Paris was talking about. She said to him, still looking at whatever,
I listen to you talk.
It's not talk.
I listen to you, and it sounds so good, being with a guy, having a life with him. Then I remember what you told me about you being a dreamer, about being full of words. I could use somebody who's going to need me, like I need them. I could use somebody who's going to be there for me.
Nina stopped looking out the windshield and looked again at Paris. She looked at him dead, solid, serious.
I can't use a dreamer.
Paris stared back at Nina, just as solid, just as serious. No more checked swings. On this one, it's you and me together, to the end of the road.
Having made his case, Paris went to close it. He leaned to Nina. Deeply, fully, he kissed her on the lips. Nina didn't much respond one way or the other.
30 minutes, Paris told her. I make sure Brunson can do this. We trade the tape for the money, then we're out.
Adding, as if his word alone wasn't good enough.
Hell, I'm leaving the tape with you. I'm not going anywhere without that.
Nina got out of the gremlin and started for their room. About halfway there, she stopped and turned back. Paris stretched to the passenger side door and rolled down the window.
Like I said,
Nina didn't shout, but her voice carried just the same.
I don't want much. Just something worth dying for.
A life with somebody? I don't think I could want much more than that. Nina went into the room. Paris put the gremlin in gear and drove off. In a big Vegas Strip theme hotel, on the 12th floor, down the hall off the elevator, was room 12101, a mini suite. The door was locked, and on the handle was a Do Not Disturb sign hung there, not in the least bit surreptitiously, by Marcus. And they went very undisturbed, Marcus and Bryce, for an hour and more as Bryce worked her special brand of magic, with Marcus on the floor, hand cinched behind his back with his own belt, as her reluctant assistant. With the aid of only a few packs of cigarettes, Bryce had made welts, burn blisters, and screams appear. On occasion, she threw in a few kicks and punches, but that was just to add a little spice to the show, break things up a bit. A good magician's always got something up their sleeve.
Where is it?
Bryce screamed in Marcus's face, her voice altered by her torn lip and missing tooth.
I don't know, whimpered Marcus, his voice altered by some 75 minutes of near ceaseless torture. The torture of the cigarettes, the torture of the kicks and punches, the torture of listening to back-to-back-to-back 70s guitar rock tracks. Ted Nugent, Steve Miller, Bad Company, BTO. 2 times Marcus had silently thanked God for Bachman-Turner Overdrive when they'd come on the radio, and Bryce had stopped the agony just long enough to take a dance break. Crazy bitch, he thought, then whimpered some more. What hurt the most for Marcus was the whimpering and sniveling and crying itself. Not that he was a hard-ass brother, but all that blubbery boo-hooing was beneath him, so he thought. With just her camel wides and her 2 fists, Bryce was able to prove to him otherwise. Marcus bawled on. I swear to God, I don't know what you're...
That, like every other time Marcus didn't have the answer Bryce wanted to hear, got him a cigarette ground on what little non-burned flesh he had left. And hocus-pocus, yet again, came a scream from Marcus.
You want this to end?
Bryce asked, sweet and kind, playing good bitch to her bad bitch self.
All you have to do is tell me where the drugs are.
What fucking drugs? There are no drugs.
Yeah, okay, no drugs. And if that's the way you want to play it, it's cool by me.
Bryce reached for her smokes, but the pack was empty.
Damn, gone through another pack.
She took a fresh one from the carton, unwrapped the cellophane with a deliberate glee.
I'll give you this, Paris. You're one tough motherfucker.
Paris. Thoughts were greaseal slick for Marcus, but he managed to latch on to a few, string them together. The phone call at the diner, him taking it, the girl accidentally running into him. Marcus realized things. The realization materialized a crazy, toxic laugh.
Am I missing something?
I'm not Paris.
Denial, that's not a good sign.
Not laughing now, just screaming.
I'm not Paris!
Come on, man. If you haven't figured it out by now, I take my job serious.
The cellophane fell away from the pack. Bryce popped it open, slipped out a cigarette.
I don't like playing games.
Not screaming now, just begging.
Please, I'm telling you, I'm...
You took the phone call. You said you were Paris.
You stupid bitch!
Beat up as she was, tired as she was from the tedious work of crucifixion, none of that cut down Bryce's speed. Just the sound of the B-word, and she threw a gun on Marcus and threw it fast.
Hey! She barked. My jacket, look, in the pocket.
Bryce did nothing, not sure what to make of Marcus's request.
Look in the pocket,
he said again, a little more forceful, a lot more urgent. Cautiously, gun still spotting him, Bryce crossed to Marcus's jacket, flopped out across the bed. Her hand dug through the pockets. Dug. It came up with the picture. Paris and Kayla by the Vegas sign. From Marcus, barely.
That's him. That's Paris. I'm looking for him, too. He stole from my boss.
Bryce shook her head.
The kid gets around.
Bryce's mouth, where the tooth was missing, where the hole was torn in her lip, hurt, and was hurting more by the second. At some point, drugs would be a good idea.
You know where he is?
Heard he picked up a girl. He's traveling with her. Thought you were her. That's why I took the call.
She didn't even know it, but Bryce was starting to huff. She had gone after the wrong mark. She had made a mistake. And mistakes, those just made Bryce mad. Crazy mad. More crazy mad than usual.
This is great.
She was all full of lament.
This is just...
The picture of Paris got torn to pieces and tossed to the ground.
This kind of shit can't happen. It can't. I'm supposed to be a professional. I'm supposed to kill the right people.
Psychosis was fueling her every word. The as-of-yet unreached potential of the girl's fucked-upness was just becoming evident. Bryce raved on.
I've got a reputation I'm trying to protect. This job's already gone on for too damn long. Now this. You know how bad it looks when I go around killing the wrong people?
Marcus began to mumble, looking down at him.
What did you say?
I don't...
What?
I don't want to die.
Strong, emphatic, dire.
I don't want to die.
Her dementia dissipated, quick as it had come on. Lightly, Bryce floated to Marcus, straddled Marcus, lowered herself to him. She stroked his face. Butterfly wings couldn't have touched more softly. She said with a voice just as silken,
"Nobody wants to die. It's just one of those things that happens."
The gun came around and settled in the middle of Marcus's forehead. His last words came as a scream.
You bitch!
Out in the hall, on the 12th floor, no one heard a gunshot from room 12-101, a mini suite. All they heard from a very loud Bose Wave radio was Bachman Turner Overdrive, guitar rocking their way through, "You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet." The Union Plaza Hotel and Casino rechristened Jackie Gogan's Plaza by its owner. Most of the signs still read with the old name, Jackie apparently too tight to spring for some new ones. Sat simultaneously at the top of Fremont Street and at the bottom of the world. Old faded colors inside and out, the plaza looked as tired as a player on an I'm gonna win it back, I'm gonna win it all back binge. A relic. That was how you described the plaza. A ghost of a former time, when it added a little extra sparkle to the Las Vegas crown. However long ago that might have been. No more high rollers, no more big spenders, no more whales, if the joint ever had any. Yet, with its nickel slots and 25-cent roulette chips, the plaza held on. The army of living dead who populated it now gambled with something besides cash. They gambled with their lives and with their last chances. But same as if they were gambling with money, the house had the odds. The house beat them down just a little lower than they were when they came through the door. Paris came through the door. Stenciled on the glass was the Union Plaza in gold letters. Below that, the plaza's slogan, Live It Up. It couldn't have been more misused if it were slathered on the door of a mortuary. Paris crossed the Omaha Lounge, where the sunspots played as usual, past the Omaha Bar, where the drunks drank as usual, to the gaming tables, where the gamblers did their usual thing. Behind one of the blackjack tables, slinging cards, was Brunson. Brunson didn't shake hands with Paris. When you were a dealer in the middle of a shift, you didn't shake hands with people. The eye in the sky didn't care for that. On the tallish side, and not particularly thin or heavy, Brunson was pretty much nondescript, except for his face. His face was memorable. His face was like a carving board. It was as if some really old geezer had willed him lines and wrinkles and crevices. Take some newspaper, crumple it up in your hand, and open it again. Look at it. You're looking at Brunson. Just add a voice that sounded like he shot out of the womb with a cig in his mouth. Paris sat at the blackjack table and waited but didn't play, then gave up his chair when the table filled with gamblers. You weren't allowed to take up space where people wanted to bet their money. The eye in the sky didn't care for that. So Paris parked himself over at the Omaha Bar, near the entrance to the XS, in the resident stage show, featuring topless dancing girls, not good enough to make the cut at Jubilee, The Follies, or even Splash, a no-name singer doing a tribute to Patsy Cline, and Baxter Fielding, a magician, who would have been just as well known if, like the singer, he had no name at all. After a while, when the shift changed, Brunson went over to the bar, to Paris. Well, well, he hussed. What do we got here? How you doing, Brunson? I'm all right. You look like shit. That was the thing about Brunson. You got no nonsense from him. None at all. Thanks, said Paris. How about some chips? Want to lose a little? Brunson let a few reds rain from one hand into the other. Technically, a dealer wasn't supposed to be handling chips away from the table. The eye in the sky didn't care for that either. But Brunson didn't always care how the eye in the sky felt. First taste is on the house. No, thanks. Drink? Something to eat? Paris shook his head no to both. It's, good to see you. Brunson smiled. The creases on his face blended like the lines on an etch-a-sketch. Yeah, okay, sure. What do you say we just get down to it? What can I do for you? Or like you put it, what can you do for me? Simple. Money. How much? Thousands. Millions. As much as you can get your hands on. Brunson's head swayed side to side.
Everybody's got a money plan. My luck, everybody's plans run through me.
You're hooked up. You know people.
Yeah, I know people. Seems like fellas are always coming to me. Fellas at the end of a rope that's half chewed by desperation. They're always coming around looking for help, because I know people. I can hook them up with people. If I could just make this connection or that other for them, well then, everything would change. It's like, far as anyone is concerned, I'm the gatekeeper between bad yesterdays and better tomorrows.
Paris tried poorly to make sense of what Brunson was saying. I mean, you've just got a rep, that's all. Talk to Brunson. He knows how to help a guy out of a tight spot. He knows how to make things good again. Like you said, man, you're the toll guard, whatever, collector.
Brunson nodded a couple of times. Then, before you go on and ask whatever it is you came to ask, ask yourself something first. Ask yourself, if Brunson's just a dealer, and nothing more than that, in what's probably the shittiest casino this side of the low end of nowhere, the gate he's supposed to be keeping watch over, is it to better tomorrows or just different ones?
Paris wasn't sure what to say to that. He had come unprepared for a philosophy class and never would have anticipated a blackjack dealer for the professor. So Paris just reiterated,
"You know people."
"Wrong people, seems like."
"Look, I don't know from everybody else, but I'm being straight. You can make some for real coin."
"I don't move drugs."
"I'm not talking about drugs. Music."
"Man, if you're trying to get me to throw in with some lounge act."
Big hand gestures from Paris cut Brunson off.
"Forget that. You know Ian Germain?"
"Singer or something. Choked on shit or something like that out in L.A.
"Yeah."
Out of Brunson came raw revulsion.
"Fucking L.A.
"I got his tape."
"His tape?"
"The last music he ever made. I got it."
Off in the casino, bells and whistles went wild. Someone had hit a slot jackpot and was whooping it up. Brunson didn't bother to look. He knew it was a nickel slot, nothing to get animated about. There wasn't a nickel slot jackpot in the whole city that could change the life, improve the lot, turn things around for a Union Plaza gambler. All it could do was slow the bleeding a little.
"No shit," Brunson said to Paris.
"No shit," Paris said back. "Hottest thing in music, and now he's offed himself, gone. And you get the last of him. Bootleg it, sell it off, whatever. There's nothing but money to be made. Nothing but."
"And what's it gonna cost me to make all this money?"
$10,000.
Brunson gave Paris a blank stare. Barely. Paris remembered bracing Chad Bayless for $1 million. He could just about recall all the hopped-up wild dreams that came with that kind of money. Chocolate money, it turned out to be. Money that melted away before you could even get it into your pocket. $1 million.
$3,000,
Paris said in response to Brunson's stare.
"You ain't too skilled at shaking people down. I hear the tape. It's legit. I'll get you $5,000.
"$5,000. That was good. Good enough."
"Thanks, man. I..."
One finger on Brunson's hand came up, wagged Paris quiet.
"Whoa. A fortune in music and you're just giving it to me for $5,000? What's the rest?"
"There is no rest, that's all."
Paris got more of that Brunson dead eye. Brunson was good at the dead eye look.
He used it while he slung cards across green felt for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, 17 years running. Yeah, he had the look down. All Paris gave up in return was,
I gotta have the money. I gotta hit the road and I gotta have something to travel on. End of story, man. End of story.
A crucial need was great in Paris's voice. It wasn't end of story, Brunson could tell. There was more to things, but Brunson let it go. He asked,
Got it with you?
Got it back where I'm staying. I can have it here in 30 minutes.
I can have your money in 15. I'm waiting on you.
I'll be back.
Paris got up, started to go. He didn't make hardly a step. From out of the showroom, the show, excess, being well over, came the dancers. Second-rate in skill, top shelf in body. There was a group of them, but as far as Paris was concerned, there was only one. The one with legs, thighs muscled up, that stretched out from a skirt as short as it was tight. The one with a shirt that covered so little, she might as well have been wearing air. And what little it covered was a fantastic pair of tits. The one, auburn hair with blue eyes that were like a couple of x-rays, who did things to a man without doing a thing. From way far away, on a bad transatlantic connection, came Brunson's voice.
Yeah, brother, I know. See that shit every day, and it's always the same. It's like you're drowning and you don't care. Rushing headlong into a fire and picking up speed. Built like a German car. Legs you'd let walk all over you and smile about while the walking was getting done. Looking at that, the whole world could drop away and you wouldn't be the wiser, wouldn't even care. Yeah, I know. I know. And here's the kick to the head. That girl loves her, some black man.
Barely. Paris felt Brunson pat him twice on the shoulder. Then,
I'll be waiting with the money.
Like Paris was caught in one of those Star Trek tractor beams, he felt himself pulled toward the woman with the auburn hair. Auburn hair and fantastic tits. He always had been a sucker for fantastic tits. In a big Vegas Strip theme hotel on the 12th floor, down the hall off the elevator was room 12101, a mini suite. The door was locked, and on the handle was a do not disturb sign. Maybe, Jay thought as he arrived at the door, still floating on a fantasy cloud, Marcus was napping. Maybe he had just taken another shower and was toweling off the glistening sparklets of water that clung to his... Involuntarily, Jay's body jerked with a shiver. He could barely stabilize his hand enough to slip the card key into the electronic door lock, doohickey. He managed it somehow, opening the door, but leaving the Do Not Disturb sign right where it sat.
Marcus?
The first thing Jay noticed was the smell. Smoky. Cigarette-y. And something else. Three something else's. One of the something else's was unfamiliar. Kind of like a firecracker, only stronger. The second smelled oddly like cooked meat. The third. Had the toilet overflowed?
Marcus, I'm back.
The ubiquitous industrial-strength Vegas drapes had been pulled across the windows. There was nothing but dark in the room. Jay got himself to the drapes, clutched them, tore them open. Sunlight fell into the mini-suite. Sunlight fell all over Marcus's carcass. A carcass covered with cigarette burns, burn blisters, and scarred flesh. A carcass lying in its own feces, termination having slackened the body's sphincter muscles, releasing a flood of internal muck. A carcass with a mine shaft, bullet dug from forehead to skull base. Jay looked at Marcus, but didn't make a sound. The sight of death was a gut shot that punched the air from his lungs and left him swaying, gasping. After a period of time that measured between 1 second and forever, Jay went down, as much collapsing as going to the body.
Marcus!
Not mindful of blood and still oozing body fluids, or the puddled defecations, Jay scooped up what was left of Marcus, rocked it in his arms. In an agonized gasp,
"No, no, no, don't be gone! Please, you can't be gone!"
From deep in a pit of despair, something caught Jay's eye. The combo of sunlight and teary eyes made the shredded bits of glossy paper on the floor grail-like shimmer. Jay couldn't help but notice them. He lay Marcus down and picked the torn papers up. Not papers. A shredded picture. On one of the little pieces was a little face. The face of Paris. Jay said to the body,
"It was him, wasn't it? It was him who did this."
With great rapidity, something inside of Jay became twisted and misshapen, then was replicated throughout him like a runaway virus. Some part of him evolved or devolved or just changed, but quite suddenly, he wasn't the same as before he walked in the room. He was a different sort of human being than a moment ago, when he pulled open the curtains and the sunlight revealed his secret fantasy lover had been brutally slaughtered in their Las Vegas mini-suite. As with the story Marcus had related to him concerning his transforming walk from Bridgeport as a teenager, Jay suddenly found himself in possession of an emotion and a correlating ability he had not previously known. The emotion was undiluted hate. The ability was to kill.
"He's dead,"
Jay pledged of Paris. Lightly he stroked Marcus's face.
"I swear to you, he is dead."
And then, leaning over, Jay pressed his mouth to the body's and ever so gently kissed its lips. It may have been the bastard kiss of lunacy, the manifestation of an odd and bizarre yearning, but even in its queerness there was a level of affection, devotion, and desire, a level of long unspoken but most genuine love that most kisses, exchanged under much better, much more normal circumstances, would never, ever know. The bus over, Jay immediately got up and left. No hesitation. That which he had become had things to do. Sharonda's shit was tight. She was looking hoochie mama fine. She had on some thigh highs, powder blue, that gave her a couple of extra inches in height. Matching that was a pair of tight ass powder blue shorts that was shit. They made her ass tight and all delicious-looking. Her top, what little top she had, was the same color as the rest of her gear. A sleeveless midriff thing that was tied in front with a very loose knot that barely kept her tits from bursting all out. The rest of Sharonda was exposed. Nothing but smooth black flesh. She was sporting only two blemishes. One intentional. At the small of her back was a tattoo, a little yin-yang thing which, if Sharonda knew how much that shit was going to hurt to get carved into her, she would have put it somewhere where people could see it. You could see it now, sort of. The small of her back was kind of blocked. The other blemish? A right eye bruise that was purple under the black of her skin.
a bruise that got sent over, courtesy of Damon Evans, who chilled in his silk sheets, just where Sharonda had left him, working the phone, cutting deals and checking profits, yelling and screaming and so forth, at all his little soldiers out there doing the heavy lifting. The soldiers who made him a big bad brother so he could lay in his silk sheets and work a phone, and, when he wasn't doing that, slap around his bitch du jour. So Sharonda waited. She stood in the doorway looking her fine self and waited for Damon to get off the phone. Sharonda's pops was a barber, not one of them hair design cats. He was old school, you know, an honest-to-God barber who ran his own barber shop. Eventually, Damon got done with the phone. Eventually, he looked up and saw Sharonda standing there doing nothing but getting shit done.
Damn!
Damon gave the word all its worth.
What the motherfuck? You like? What the fuck do you think?
Answering his own question beneath the sheets, something stirred, rose up. Sharonda's lips parted in something like a smile.
Yeah, I think you like.
It was so very, very close to being a smile.
Get your black ass over here.
Sharonda did as told, and was glad to. She went to the bed. The stiff heels of her powder blue boots made what was beneath her powder blue shirt jiggle with every step. Gently, she sailed down to the mattress. While Sharonda was doing all that, Damon occupied himself by sliding a hand under the sheets, sliding a hand to himself. To Sharonda.
What's your name?
He didn't even remember.
Sharonda,
she said.
Yeah, girl, you all right?
Damon looked her over, inspected her like a horse to be traded.
Bitch looks that all right. It's like she's wearing a sign, open for business, or some shit. See bitches all day long with their signs hung out. Then they wonder why a brother be giving them the eye, trying to roll up on them. They be doing it because a brother see a sign, and he don't do nothing about it. Then he like some ignorant, can't-read nigger, like he a turn-out punk. Brother see a sign, brother see a bitch is open for business. He gonna handle some business. Bitches got to know that. Like that Tyson rape me bitch. You go round looking for trouble, don't be all crying and shit when you get some trouble in your ass. Just what happened when a bitch looks, aight, and you girl.
With his tongue, Damon slathered his lips.
You aight, except for that shit round your eye. What's up with that?
He didn't even remember beating her. Down in Sharonda's pop's barbershop, he had all that barbershop gear. He had them big-ass tilt-back chairs, a towel steamer, combs, sitting around in that blue juice.
You gotta do something about that shit,
Damon said.
Yeah, I'm gonna do something about it, Sharonda agreed. Here's what you need to do something about.
Damon pulled back the sheets, revealing a cock, sizable but not doing much to support the myth.
You need to be going to work on that. Yeah, let me go to work on that. You just close them eyes and lay back.
Damon did.
Sharonda will take care of you,
she said. Lots of times, Sharonda would head down to her pop's barber shop and borrow things, curling irons and straightening combs, some relaxer if she needed it. Her pops was good about that, borrowing her whatever she needed. Today, just a bit earlier, in fact, Sharonda had gone down to her pop's to borrow something. Sharonda reached for the small of her back, for the yin-yang tattoo. She reached for it and pulled from the band of her shorts a very, very shiny, a very, very sharp, stainless steel straight razor. She said,
"Sharonda'll take care of every little thing."
Payback is a slapped around one time too many bitch. In Nevada, selling guns was a decent and respectable business. No different than selling shoes, cars, gardening equipment. Except that guns were no good for anything but killing, it was no different. Mac Bowen's Guns, Guns, Guns was, like most Nevada gun shops, clean, well-lit, and carried a variety of small arms, hunting rifles, and semi-automatic assault rifles that complied with the law, but could be quite easily converted into fully automatic weapons that didn't comply with the law, but made it that much simpler, easier, and more convenient to blow people's heads off. Jay walked into Mac Bowen's Guns, Guns, Guns with his clothes slept in wrinkled, his tie disoriented at the knot, and with a big red stain of blood on his otherwise white shirt. In spite of all that, Jay walked into the shop sporting his best, "I'm just another honest citizen who wants to buy a gun" look. The guy behind the counter, who was not Mac Bowen, took a look at Jay, at his sweaty, flinchy nature, at his unmissable bloodstain, and said, for lack of knowing what else to say, "Can I help you?"
"Yes," Jay quite casually responded. "I would like to buy a gun."
"A gun?"
"Yes."
Over in a corner, checking out cop killer bullets, a shady-looking guy, long dirty coat and a dirty baseball cap to match, dug the scene.
"What kind of gun?"
"Oh, I don't know."
Jay's eyes fell over the display case before him. They came to rest on a Colt Anaconda 44 Magnum long barrel. Jay didn't know it was a Colt Anaconda 44 Magnum long barrel. Jay just knew it was a really big gun.
"That looks like a good one right there," Jay said, pointing at the big gun, the Anaconda.
The counter guy, skeptical,
"What are you planning on doing with this gun?"
He was going to track down and dish out a little vengeance to a dude named Paris by putting a bullet or two or five in the back of his head.
"Hunting, I think would be good."
In the background, the shady-looking guy slipped out the door.
"Hunting what?" "Bears."
"You don't much hunt bears with handguns."
"Birds. I'm going to hunt birds."
Counter guy eased himself for a phone.
"Why don't you wait here a second?" he said, putting in his voice the same leisure with which he moved. "I gotta make a call."
Jay may have been in some serious post-trauma shock, but not so much so that he couldn't still read a face. Matching counter guy's easy manner, Jay made for the door. He said,
"You know what? I don't think I need that gun. I don't need any gun. I meant to get, the other thing."
"Hold on."
"That's what I need. I'm gonna get that, and I'll be back."
"Hey!"
Jay gave up on being casual and bolted. He was out the door and down the strip mall, flying past the used CD shop, the taxidermist, the Cuban rolled cigar store. They weren't Cubans doing the rolling, they were Mexicans, but Las Vegas didn't know the difference. Didn't know, didn't care. Jay ran and ran and ran past the shady guy who leaned up against the mall's stucco wall, leaned there like he was kicking it, waiting for a cab, a bus. He was waiting for Jay.
"Hey!"
Shady guy yelled. Jay kept running.
"Hey!"
Shady guy yelled again. Jay kept running but said,
"I have to..."
I know what you have to do. You have to get a gun.
Jay stopped running. He turned around, stared over at the shady guy in the shadow, all dressed in black, scruffy-faced and wild-haired. Something about him just hanging there made Shady Guy look all the shadier. Made him look like a perv outside a schoolyard, peeping preteens. Shady Guy's mien and manner might have freaked Jay a little, but once you stumble on headshot bodies in your mini-suite, pervert-looking guys don't give you much bother. Shady Guy to Jay.
Yeah, you need a gun. Why not? You're an American. You got a right?
I only need it for...
Making fly-swatting gestures in the air, Shady Guy didn't have time for explanations and logic.
Don't matter what you need it for. All that matters is you need it. Except you can't get it. Not in a place like that.
Shady Guy juked his head back toward Mac Bowen's guns, guns, guns.
Even if they would sell it to you, which they won't, you gotta wait 5 days to get it.
Five?
Who's got 5 days?
I don't have.
That's my point. Who does? Fucking laws.
Shady Guy was doing the talking for the both of them.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not one of them militia wackos and nothing. But when the goddamn liberals get in the way of our basic freedom to strap up, then it's time for all of us to stock up on ammo and canned food.
Shady Guy was talking a little crazy, but not so crazy he didn't fit right in with the rudeness that had been going on in Jay's life over the last 24 hours. Jay, talking a little craziness of his own, helped Shady Guy to his plight.
Marcus, I need it for Marcus. I promised.
Sure you did. You made a promise. And now these motherfuckers won't sell you a piece. What's the guy to do?
What do I do?
Next thing Jay knows, he's standing in the same strip mall parking lot at the trunk of a 76 Granada Ghia, pea green, staring at one of the finest collections of illegal weapons one man could ever possess. Jay's eyes wide like he was looking at a pharaoh's treasure.
Oh, God.
Yeah, go to church every Sunday, get down on your knees, and thank God we still live in a country where a guy can get his mitts on some of these.
Shady Guy waved a hand over the weapons like he was a game show prize girl displaying a washer-dryer combo.
Nice, huh?
Yeah, go on,
Shady Guy prompted.
Pick one up.
Jay scanned the spread. There were Rugers and Mitchells and Charter Arms and a couple of S&Ws. But Jay's hand went to a Sig Sauer P226 9mm. Just as with the Colt Anaconda 44 Magnum long barrel, Jay didn't know the Sig Sauer P226 9mm was a Sig Sauer P226 9mm. Like with the Anaconda, all he knew was it was a big gun. Shady Guy schooled him.
Sig Sauer P226 9mm. Double action. Full time. Internal impact safety. Yeah. Some guy's looking down the barrel of that. All of a sudden, he knows who's who and what's what. That right there'll end all kinds of social discourse. All kinds. Good choice. You know guns, right?
No.
Come on. You can tell me. Guys who know guns go for the SS.
Slightly flattered.
No, really.
But it feels good, don't it? To the hand, having a gun. That shit feels real good.
It did. It did feel good to Jay. But feeling good wasn't enough. Jay asked,
Is it good? I mean, is it a good gun for me?
Depends on what you want it for.
Payback is what I want it for.
Dark clouds sailed over Jay.
I want it to put somebody on a one-way train straight to hell. I want it to make sure somebody never sees this side of 6 feet of dirt again. A beat. A shrug.
Yeah, it's good for that.
How much?
You know, let's say 250.
You take credit cards?
I'm selling guns out of the back of my car.
For emphasis, Shady Guy pointed to the guns in the back of his car.
What do you think? I take fucking credit cards?
Okay, 250, I can handle that.
It's yours. Welcome to the wonderful world of the Second Amendment.
Jay looked over his new possession. He asked,
You have a silencer?
A sigh. You don't need that. That's movie shit.
I want it.
Yeah. Shady Guy laughed. A silencer. Why don't you get yourself a laser sight while you're at it?
You have one?
It was dusk in Las Vegas, and it was fairly quiet. There was traffic on the 15. There was always traffic on the 15. People racing the devil to get their gamble on, but other than that, it was quiet. Most of the noise, along with most of the action in Las Vegas, took place behind the walls of the fake castles and phony pyramids and make-believe tropic isles. It was quiet also at the Shady Tree Inn, just the sounds of the old wood settling and of Nina splashing through the pool she hoped was at least as clean as it looked. She broke the surface, swept back her hair, made richer by the water, and rested poolside. From a towel, she took her watch, which lay next to her ubiquitous speed blade. It had been 1 hour and 20 minutes, nearly that, since Paris had left. 30 minutes, he had said.
30 minutes, Nina scoffed.
She heaved herself out of the pool. The water dripped and splattered on the concrete, loud in the quiet. Toweled off, and wet foot splattered back to the room. It was dark in the room, dusk and all, shades drawn. Nina turned on a light and toweled off some more, and didn't notice the blonde woman with the battered face sitting in a chair in the shadows, until the woman said,
Hey!
Nina sprang back into the nightstand, knocking the lamp, but not knocking it over.
Well, careful, Bryce said. You're going to break something.
Flipping her head toward the bed.
Have a seat.
For a second, Nina did nothing, except try and figure out who this woman was. Even simply resting in the chair, there was something about her, something besides her mangled features, her manner or her tone, that carried with it a considerable nastiness and told Nina it didn't matter who she was. What she was no good. Quietly, cautiously, Nina sat. Bryce let a moment or so pass, and as it did, she checked Nina out.
Turn your head a bit.
Nina did.
Back the other way.
Nina did that as well.
Pretty. Real pretty. I can see why this Paris guy goes for you.
That came off as a compliment.
I can definitely see why someone would go for you.
That came off as simply lurid.
What's your name? Nina. Nina. Nina, did you know I have to orgasm once a day? Of course, you didn't know that. How could you? Well, I do, once a day. At least once a day. And I don't mean I like to come once a day. I have to, or I just get seriously bent out of shape. Most times, guys are good for it, for getting me off, most times. But when there's no guy around, well, then you just have to make do. Know what I'm saying?
As dim as the light in the room was, the gun resting quietly in the crotch of Bryce's lap seemed to glow. Nina's body jerked with a shudder. She became unbelievably nauseous, more so than she had ever been. any time previously in her life that she could recall. It was a sickness so intense and severe it made her want to both puke and cry. Fear kept her from doing any more than giving off another jerk, another shudder.
Now, you're probably asking yourself, why is this bitch telling me about her orgasm cycle? I'll tell you why, Nina. Because it's time for you and me to get to know each other. Just as girls.
Down Sahara Avenue were the Sahara Lake Apartments. The lake being a man-made, algae-filled pond the apartments were built around. They were okay, the apartments. Just okay. The kind of inexpensive, dry-walled and bad-carpeted rooms a girl who danced in a low-end Vegas review at a low-end Vegas casino could afford. The Sahara Lake Apartments were where Willia lived. Willia, her unbelievably true name was Willia Desire. Being the long-legged, auburn-haired, blue-eyed, hot-bodied dancer who, good to Brunson's word, had a thing for brothers. A thing to the point where pretty much all Paris had to do to pick her up was stick his face in front of hers. Some weak gibble-gabble followed that, which was followed by Paris and his gremlin following Willia to the Sahara Lake Apartments. That's how he ended up in her pad, on a chair, watching Willia sitting on her bed, naked head to toe, combing her hair. Long, even strokes that just about lulled Paris into a trance. Willia's amazing body was only made more amazing by its lack of clothes. She was a smart gal, too. Not that she was a graduate-level reader, but at least from the bit Paris had rapped with her, she didn't seem to be as stupid as he figured a showgirl would be.